As I said before, this is Christ the King Sunday, and of course Thanksgiving Sunday, the Sunday before Thanksgiving. And it's the last Sunday of the Christian year. We are headed into Advent. Next Sunday will be the first Sunday of Advent, the first Sunday of the Christian year. A new year will begin, and we'll begin to tell the story of Jesus over again. But this is kind of a weird text, honestly, for this day, because it doesn't mention thrones, and yet it's Christ the King. It doesn't mention a court. It doesn't mention all the sycophants around singing praises to the King. No, none of that. This is a Holy Week text, for goodness sake. What is it doing here? Why now? Well, I think it may be because Jesus is a different kind of king than anyone ever expected, than anyone had ever heard of, a different kind of king than we expect or have ever heard of, except in these stories. If you're listening to the reading, the people who make fun of him, who are Jewish, use the word Messiah. You've saved others, save yourself if you are the Messiah. Those who are Roman use the word king. Save yourself if you're a king. They even put a sign up, King of the Jews. They're making fun. Of course he's not a king. He's a criminal. He's being executed. He is as far from being a king as anything they could ever imagine. He is as far from being a Messiah as anything anyone could imagine. And yet, here in this story, we have an opportunity to eavesdrop and overhear what is essentially a conversation among three condemned criminals who are being put to death by the Roman Empire. I don't know how we got this conversation, frankly. There are those who would say Luke just kind of made it up because it doesn't appear in the other Gospels. He certainly didn't hear it, and it certainly wasn't from any of the male disciples that he heard it because they were not here. They were all gone. Is it possible that the women who were left standing there listening to what was going on could have overheard this conversation and it was kept alive in the community of women over time? I don't know. But it's come down to us. There are two criminals. No, there are three criminals. We've heard this story so often we tend to forget. Somebody looking up on that hill would have seen three condemned men. Three men who had done the crime, now they were doing the time on the cross. One of them turns to Jesus and says, and you have to remember to even speak when you have spikes through your wrists and your feet, you have to pull yourself up to breathe. Ultimately, that's how crucifixion kills someone. You suffocate. But they pull themselves up to breathe. So this was a very painful conversation, physically painful. The first one says, look, if you are the Messiah, get me out of here. Get us out of here. That's the prayer we still say most of the time, isn't it? Jesus, if you're the Messiah, get me out of here. I know I created this mess myself, but just get me out of here. Please get me out of this place. Get me out of this cancer diagnosis. Get me out of this grief I'm feeling at the loss of a loved one. Get me out of this difficult work situation. Get me out of this, you fill in the blank. I've often thought that as long as there were tests in school, there would be prayer in school. Because somewhere, any given test day, there are children sitting there saying, oh God, please just let me pass this. I'll study next time, I promise. Just get me out of here. That's our prayer. That's the prayer of the first criminal, the first thief. The second thief, though, takes a completely different approach. He tells the first one, be quiet. We deserve what we're getting here, but this man has done nothing to deserve what he's suffering. You see, if they were accused of thievery, Jesus was accused of being what today we would call a terrorist, a threat to the political order and the religious order. But this criminal says he doesn't deserve what he's getting. And then he turns and he says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. What kind of kingdom could he have imagined? They were all three hanging there being executed. It certainly wasn't the kind of kingdom that the emperor was in charge of, the one who was executing them through Pontius Pilate. It wasn't even a kingdom like Herod had, named king of the Jews by the emperor, and many of the Jews didn't even think he was Jewish, much less a king. What kingdom could he have been imagining? That phrase, remember me, appears fairly frequently in the Bible, and it doesn't just mean think about me. When God remembers someone, things happen. God remembered the slaves in Egypt, and they were called into freedom. Hannah prayed to God, remember me. She had gone so long without being able to have a child. She has a child, Samuel. But then she has to give Samuel up to the service of God. To say, remember me, really means let me be a part of whatever it is you're doing here. Whatever this kingdom is, whatever this reign of yours is, let me be a part of it. We've heard this story so frequently that sometimes it ceases to scandalize us. Soon after Constantine allowed Christianity as a religion in the empire, Jesus stopped looking like that guy hanging on the cross and started looking a lot like the emperor. And the Christians started acting a lot like the emperor. But you see, Jesus is a king who never put anyone on trial. Instead, he was the one who was put on trial. Jesus is a king who never condemned anyone. Speaking from the cross, he looks at those who nailed him there and he says, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. No, he was the one who was condemned. Jesus is a king who never punished anyone, but instead received the worst punishment that the Roman Empire in all of their cruel imagination could come up with, and he took it in and he absorbed it. And he did it out of love, not obligation. There are some folks who will tell you Jesus just had to do that. He didn't have any choice. I don't believe that for a minute. Because you see, love is always a choice. Love that is coerced is not love. It's coercion. Love is always a free response to any situation. And Jesus choosing to follow this fate, choosing to allow himself to be numbered among the least of these. He told his followers that they would find him among the least of these. He didn't just say it. He became the least of these, a condemned criminal. No, he is the kind of king who operates out of one principle, and that principle is love, and calls his followers to do the same thing. He could have walked away. He could have operated out of fear and walked away. He even says, I could have called down legions of angels, but he doesn't. Out of love, he walks this path so we will know that his kingdom is not only not of this world, it's unlike anything we ever imagined. And we are called to respond in love. Why'd you come here today? Well, for some of you, it's because your child or grandchild is singing. For some of you, it's because that's just what you do. For some of you, it's because your parents made you come. But the invitation is to come in love, out of a response to God's love. That's the invitation. Day in and day out. We've been talking about pledging recently. Oh, that church, you know, all they talk about is money. But pledging is simply a response of love. Offering God a portion of what God has given us is an opportunity to share that love in return. When we go on mission out in the world, it's not so we can pat ourselves on the back and say what great people we are, because quite frankly, when we really reflect on it, we're not all that great a lot of the time. No, it is to share that love which has been shared with us so much that it overflows and we can't keep it to ourselves. Jesus is the kind of king who, instead of operating like your traditional power structure with trials and condemnations and punishments, sets up a whole new structure based on love, based on invitation of all people, based on reaching out in love to all people, even those who may put us on trial. He never expected his followers to put other people on trial, but he did expect that we would be put through trials. He did not expect his followers to condemn anyone, but he did know that if we followed him, we would receive condemnation. He did not want his followers or expect them to offer punishment to other people, but he knew at points we might suffer punishment and called us to do so with the kind of grace that he showed. This is a kingdom that's different from anything anyone has ever experienced. It is God coming into the world to know what it's like to live in our skins, loving us so much that God wanted to walk around in our skins, know what it feels like, know the love and know the pain. When I was a sophomore in high school in a little country school in Montgomery County in Cunningham, Tennessee, Montgomery Central, we had a couple of folks who had just graduated from Austin Peay to come and teach English, ostensibly, but they also had a background in theater. Doug and Anita Tidwell. Doug had grown up in Dixon. He had started college later. He had worked some and then started college in his 30s. But he came and he established the speech program and the theater program at this little country school. We'd never had anything like it. And literally transformed my life. I probably wouldn't be standing up here in front of you if it weren't for some of the things I learned from them. But one of the things he taught me came as a surprise. We were talking one day, and he said, you know, one of the greatest blessings I ever had was that when I was in high school, I failed a course. Well, that didn't sound like a blessing to me. As a high school student, I knew it would not sound like a blessing to my parents. He said, it is the greatest blessing a teacher could ever have. Every teacher should fail at least one course, because that way we know what it feels like to sit in class and have no idea what's going on. We know what it's like to look at a test in front of us and not even understand the question, much less know the answer. That's what God did for us. Not just the folks who get the answers right, not just the great students, but those of us who struggle, those of us who almost never, if ever, get the answer right. He became the least of these, so he would know what it was like to be that student. Thanksgiving is coming up, and I have so very much to be thankful for. I'm thankful for Margaret and Sarah and Elizabeth. I could not have done anything to deserve the family that I have. It's a gift. I'm grateful for you as a congregation. You see, I didn't choose you. I was appointed here. And you didn't choose me. The bishop inflicted me on you. Okay? But I am grateful that I can stand here before you and offer you the best I have to offer, and you will love me even when we disagree. I'm grateful for your faithfulness and your presence in the world as well. Living out your faith in many quiet ways, as well as ways that get acknowledged from time to time. I'm grateful for those teachers like Doug and Anita Tidwell who formed and shaped me. I've mentioned her before, but June Abernathy, my guidance counselor, who saw something in this country kid that nobody else saw, including myself. I'm grateful for those people who shaped and formed me. Most of all, I think I'm grateful that God remembers me and remembers you and invites us into this thing God has going on called the reign of God, called the kingdom of God. It's not like the kingdoms of this world. It's not like the government of the United States. It's not like any government you've ever seen. It's not like any monarchy you've ever seen. We have been invited into the most innovative, life-changing, world-changing thing that ever entered the world. And I'm grateful for that. I don't always understand it. I don't always live up to it. But I am grateful that I am called to be a part of it and that you are too. So Jesus, remember us when you come into your kingdom. Thanks be to God.